Hi, I'm Jen O'Neill, editor of She Kicks, the magazine for women's football. We've teamed up with UK charity Breast Cancer Care. We all know someone who's been affected by it, and there are lots of things happening in October as part of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So we're doing our bit by donating £3 from every subscription. To subscribe, head to shekicks.net and to the online shop. Join in the conversations on Twitter using the hashtag SheKicksBreastCancer, and a big cheers to our mates at the Women's Footy Podcast.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hi, welcome along to another episode of the Women's Football Podcast. I'm Hamish, this is Kieran.
Hello all.
Bit of a pause there, mate.
I'm a bit tired, mate. I sincerely apologise if there's a bit of a croak in my voice. Bit of a late one last night after a celebratory wedding for a friend of mine yesterday.
Great, so there we go. Kieran is professional as always. But I've got to say, mate, I know we've been doing a lot of podcasts recently and a lot of special guests, but it's nice just the two of us again.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot to get through, haven't we? So I think we thought that a third voice might make the podcast a little bit too long for this edition. So just the two of us on this one, so hopefully people won't mind too much.
Right, yes, and as you said, lots to talk about. World Cup qualifiers are very much underway. The WSL title has come down to the wire. There's plenty of news going on around that league as well. The Champions League draw has been made, so we'll have a little chat about that. We've got an interview with Glasgow City head coach, not manager, he specifically told me not to mention that, head coach Ed Black. We'll have a look at what's going on around Europe. There's plenty of stuff going on in the NWSL despite the league coming to an end. We've got part two of our interview with Joanna Lohman and Leanne Sanderson, and then that's us done. So let's get straight into it, and let's talk about England first and foremost. Brent Hill's in charge, and a 6-0 win over Belarus. Where do we start, Kieran?
We start with an energetic and positive performance for England. I think we're always very quick to knock teams when they don't perform to the best of their ability, which unfortunately for England did occur during Euro 2013. So let's give them some credit. They played very well yesterday. They look very sharp. They look very hungry. They were playing, I don't mean to be disrespectful, they were playing a poor nation. Let's not pretend that they're anything but you still have to beat the opposition that are put in front of you. Belarus set up to defend, which meant England had to be the sort of creative ones and try and break them down. And they did that, and they scored 6 goals, and they should be pleased with that. There were some positive performances from the likes of Lucy Bronze, who was excellent at left-back. Jordan Nobbs was, as you would expect, classy in midfield. And Karen Carney nipped in with a well-taken hat-trick. So, you know, they should be pleased, and it's a good start for Brent Hills.
What struck me looking at the starting 11 was Lucy Bronze playing at left back, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the other thing was no holding midfielder. Now, I know you're playing Belarus, but I don't think that starting 11 would be as effective against one of the better nations, because you can't play Farrell Williams and Jordan Nobbs in central midfield without someone screening the back four and having that safety net.
Well, Farrah did that job yesterday, and to be fair to her, she did it quite well. And I think that's actually a role that has become more hers over the last maybe year or two. I think you look at Farrah's goal-scoring record, it's very, very impressive. But over the last, I'd say, 12 to 18 months, the goal-scoring hasn't been there as it was before. But she is taking more of a deeper position, and she is tending to pick up the ball from the back four and spray it out wide to the likes of Enya Luko and, in yesterday's case, Tony Duggan. So I think it worked well yesterday, but I do kind of agree with you. I think when we come up against stronger nations and Anita Asante or someone of that mould, just to sort of be that enforcer and be that strong player in the middle of the park potentially could be someone that's more effective. But credit to Farrah, she played well yesterday. She's got a great array of passing, and I thought she did a good job, to be fair, mate.
I did say that we were going to talk about Lucy Bronze at left back, and obviously with my Everton allegiance, I'm going to champion the case of Alex Greenwood. I am slightly disappointed that we can't seem to have a naturally left-sided left back, but Lucy Bronze did do well, and she has had a great season for Liverpool, playing at left back as well at times.
Yeah, she has, and Karen Carney rightfully got player of the match yesterday because of her hat-trick, but Lucy Bronze was a very close second, I think, for a lot of people, and some actually said she probably should have got player of the match, so credit to her. But I'm with you, I think it's always nice to see a left-sided player at left back. You've got Alex Greenwood, Corinne Yorston, who, yes, she's slightly older, but Corinne's had a fantastic season for Bristol Academy, and she's not been in a squad for a long, long time, but she's been, you know, an amazing leader for Bristol. Obviously, we're going to talk about the title showdown that's coming up this week, and she's another one. You look at who's played left back over the last couple of years. It's been Steph Horton. You've got Lucy Bronze today. Alex Scott has played left back as well. All right-footed. Maybe I'm just old-fashioned, but I think it's nice to see a left-footed player playing at left back. But that's not to take anything away from the three players that have played there, because they've all done a very good job when they have.
You call yourself old-fashioned, but I think if you ask any manager, they'll tell you that you need balance all over the pitch, and a left-footed defender certainly adds balance to the back line. But the game also gave Brent Hills a chance to cement his claims as the next England boss. Do you think that the game certainly did him some favours?
Yeah, I think so. I think as they said in commentary yesterday, you wouldn't want a better start, really, would you? And certainly in terms of an opposition, you can't really ask for anyone that's potentially weaker. As I said, I don't want to be disrespectful to Belarus. You want to, you know, give them credit. They were 6-0 down after an hour. So for 30 minutes, they managed to shut up shop and really sort of defend resolutely. But yeah, you know, Brent Hills will be very pleased. But I guess part of him would probably have liked to have maybe started against a stronger nation, because if you get a good result against a Sweden, for example, or a Germany, and I know that in the qualifiers you're not going to come up against teams like that because we are a seeded side, it gives you that push, doesn't it? It gives you that opportunity to say, well, I've beaten Sweden, or I've beaten Germany, or I've beaten a major nation. You've seriously got to consider me now for this position.
Of course, those of you who watched the coverage on the BBC would have noticed an interview with the FA's Director of Elite Development, Dan Ashworth. And he had some very interesting things to say, didn't he, Kieran?
Yeah, he did. He was sort of talking about specifically what type of candidate they were looking for. And, you know, he mentioned the fact that they're looking for someone who has an affinity with women's football, someone who's got international experience. But what he did say was, really, we're just looking for the right person. And what the right person is, we don't know, but clearly the FA will have their ideas of what they're looking for, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, who's in place. He did also say that they want the person in place before the next set of qualifiers, which comes at the end of October, so I would imagine we would have an announcement maybe in the next few weeks.
However, Brent Hills, of course, gets another go at leading the side out against Turkey on Thursday. Who would you like to see come into the team, Kira? Do you think he'll shake it up, or will he stick with the starting 11 that obviously beat Belarus?
Well, he can go one of two ways, can't he? He can either stick with consistency and stick with the same 11 that started and try and give them an opportunity to impress. Or, you know, he might see it as a chance for other players that didn't play on Saturday to get a go. I mean, personally, and I know that she's a blogger of ours, and it might be that I'm being biased, but I'd love to see Gemma Bonner get a run out, mate. I think Gemma has been unbelievable for Liverpool this season. She's captained the side at 22 years old, and I've championed her before, and I maintain it. I still think she is a future England captain. I think she's that good, and I would really like to see her get a run out against Turkey, maybe alongside Casey or Sophie Bradley, because I think she's got a lot to offer, and I think it's only a matter of time before she gets a chance and really shows what she's made of. And again, you know, I'm going to sound like I'm really mocking these nations. Turkey aren't the strongest. So if you're going to break a player into international football and really give them a chance in a competitive match, do it against a Turkey. You know, give Gemma an opportunity to show what she's made of against a nation that might not be the strongest, but, you know, allows her to get that experience of playing in a competitive match. So yeah, that's who I'd like to see, mate.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's very easy to select the players who have done it, have the experience, and will get the job done. But you look at the likes of Aluko, Ellen White, Casey Stoney, all these players who, when we need them, they'll step up. But what if they're injured? What if they're unavailable? You know, we need to give these players a lot of experience on the international stage. So I do think this is an opportunity to mix it around a little bit and bring in the likes of Tash Dowie, who came on and scored against Belarus. She's clearly in form. You know, give her a chance from the start. I probably wouldn't call her an impact sub myself. I might be wrong. She's not a Tony Duggan, a live wire who can come on and get about the opposition. She's someone who is going to start up front by herself, is going to run all day. She's also a danger, but I just don't think she's quite right coming off the bench. I might be wrong, but
she's a poacher, isn't she? And that goal that she scored showed that. You know, she won. It was a cross by Karen Carney. She won the header. It came off the bar, and it came off the bar at her very quickly, and she was able to adjust and nod in the rebound. And yeah, people will say it was a few yards out, but you know, to be in that position and to have the instinct to actually react after the ball cannon back off the crossbar. I agree with you, mate. I think I'd also like to see Tash Dowie get a start. We know what Ellen White is capable of. I rate Ellen incredibly highly. And as you said, you know, you want to have other options. And if Ellen is unavailable for a game, you know, in future, you want to know that you've got players like Tash who have, you know, done it, been there, done it and seen it. And, you know, have proved themselves on the international level. So, yeah, let's see the Liverpool pair in, Gemma and Tash for the next game.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking a lot more about Liverpool in just a few minutes. But first, we better quickly have a little roundup of the other games around Europe. And Kieran, the Germans are at it again, aren't they?
They certainly are, mate. Yeah, they won 9-0 against Russia. Obviously, Russia gave England some difficulties during Euro 2013 in that one-all draw, but Germany certainly had no difficulties. 9-0 win at home. Oof. Names on the score sheet, including Kessler, Gosling, Okoyona, Dimbabi. You know, there were some seriously big hitters playing for Germany, so a convincing victory for them. Euro 2013 host Sweden, they won 2-0 against Poland at home. Slightly less straightforward for them. Lotte Schelin and Caroline Sager on the score sheet for them. A couple of home nation interest as well. At time of recording, Scotland are currently 6-0 up away in the Faroe Islands. There's about 20 minutes left in that game. And the Republic of Ireland won 2-0 at home to Slovakia. So the girls in green will certainly be happy about that one.
Excellent. All going according to plan.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
So, Kieran, we've got to talk about the WSL title decider, Bristol Academy versus Liverpool. Well, I've said that backwards because it's at Liverpool, which obviously gives them a little bit of home advantage, but it's going to be a fantastic game.
It is, and it couldn't really have been planned any better, could it, to have the title decider between the top two clubs live on BT Sport. And credit to BT Sport, because this wasn't a scheduled game for them to be live, and they've made it live because it's such an important game in women's football. So hats off to BT Sport. And, you know, it's going to be incredible, mate. It's going to be seen by a lot of people, hopefully. Hopefully it will encourage a lot of people to go to the ground as well. For those that can't make it, obviously can watch it on the box. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a really tasty contest between the two best teams in the division.
Absolutely. Now, we could go the usual route and preview the game, but we're going to do something slightly different, and we're going to pick three players on either side who need to have big games to seal the title for their team. I'm going to go first, and I'm going to choose Liverpool. And for me, the obvious ones, of course, people like Tash Dowie, Farrell Williams, Gemma Bonner at the back. But my first choice is going to be Katrin, who, for me, has just been absolutely outstanding for Liverpool and offers that rock that their entire plethora of attacking talent just sits, because they know that she's back there. They know that she's going to be the one who's going to pick up any errant passes and just stop the opposition. Bristol will have to avoid her like the plague, because she's absolutely brilliant in patrolling the midfield and scored an absolute belter not so long ago. Ironically against Bristol. So they have been warned. The second player I'm going to go for is Schroeder, who, when I first saw her at the beginning of the season, I was completely and utterly unsure about her, because she was giving the ball away, she wasn't strong enough. But now, wow, what a difference a season makes. Up and down that left-hand side, quality into the box. And really, her game improves because the likes of Louise Fors and Da Costa move inside and drag the defence inside. And Schroeder and certainly Lucy Bronze certainly capitalise on that. And I watched the Merseyside derby recently, and those two just tore Everton to pieces. So Schroeder's another one who could be a real attacking outlet for them. And then my final one is Da Costa herself. Again, another one that I wasn't so sure about the first time I saw her, but just her movement and the cleverness and the intricacies that, you know, the understanding with Dowie and Fors and Williams. And she's a big player for Liverpool, and certainly one who I think will have a big say on this game. So they're my three. Who are you going for Bristol?
Yeah, I think we're going to try and, as you say, avoid the obvious ones like Natalia, who's obviously been outstanding for Bristol this season. My first pick is going to be Gemma Rose, who plays obviously at the heart of the Bristol defence. When you've got Tash Dowie and all the attacking threat that you've mentioned just now, you're going to need someone who's going to stand up and be counted. And I look at Gemma Rose as being the player who's going to do that. Really solid, lots of international experience at youth level and under 23. Without question, a future England centre-back, potentially alongside someone like Gemma Bonner in the future. I think she's going to be an important player for the game. I think she's going to have a lot of work to do, and I think that she could be incredibly important to the side. So Gemma's my first pick. My second pick is Angharad James. Angharad's played a vital role in the sort of holding midfield position over the course of the season. She's had a real impact this year. I think that this has really been her breakout season. She's, alongside the other Welsh girls in the team, she's really stood out. And as we've mentioned, with Liverpool's attacking threat, they are going to need someone in the midfield to really boss it and give some protection to that back four. And I look at Angharad as being the player that can do that. Finally, might be an obvious one, but I'm going to go Laura Del Rio. Now, most people, as I said, will probably expect me to pick Natalia, but Del Rio is class. Simple as. When Laura Del Rio plays well for Bristol, Bristol play well. Simple as that. She's crafty, she's creative, she knows what she's doing on the park every single minute that she's on it. She picks passes that other people don't even see. And I think if Del Rio is fit and she's firing, it could be that she is the player to lead Bristol to victory and potentially the title.
Some fine choices there, but of course, if you agree with us or not, we'd love to hear from you. So let us know who you think are going to be the players to influence that title decider.
You're going
to
stick your neck out, mate.
Oh, am I going to stick my neck out? I want to say Bristol. I think it will be Liverpool. To be fair, I want to say Bristol because of my obvious Everton allegiance.
I'm probably going to have to agree with you, I think. I think this could be a high-scoring draw, which obviously would be enough to hand Liverpool the title, but obviously regardless of the fact that they've won the title or who wins the title, both clubs have already qualified for the Champions League, haven't they?
Absolutely right. And as it happens, we've got WF bloggers on both sides, so we thought we'd catch up with both of them and congratulate them for achieving Champions League football. So here's Gemma of Liverpool Ladies up first.
I think it's a great achievement for the club, and it's one that we've all been working towards since the beginning of the season and since the squad was put together. And I think it's just reward for us in the end, obviously. We've had a good season and the players have done really well to gel, so I think everyone deserves it.
So that was Gemma Bonner of Liverpool, and here's Tash Harding of Bristol.
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, normal and what we deserve, and I think it's credit to the club and the girls that have been playing this season. You know, we went about our business quietly and we didn't, you know, really shout about and, you know, try and prove us, like, other people wrong. And we just took game by game. And I think, you know, like everyone has said and congratulated us, we've done well to get where we are. And I think, you know, everyone deserves it. And all the girls, you know, can't wait to play in the Champions League and actually show that, you know, we're a force to be reckoned with and, you know, get the credit where it's due. And everyone's now looking forward to the Liverpool game, and hopefully that'll be a great day as well, and hopefully we'll go down in history, so can't wait.
So of course Bristol Academy and Liverpool both qualified for the Champions League, and they were given a massive helping hand by Arsenal. Want to take this one?
Difficult one to cover, isn't it?
Certainly is. It's not something you really want to see, is it?
No. For those that don't know, and we sure pretty much everyone does, Arsenal Ladies were deducted 3 points from their league campaign for fielding an ineligible player. They failed to register Katie Chapman for their away game at Liverpool Ladies just after Euro 2013, a game which they won quite comfortably. And unfortunately for Arsenal, as a result of that unregistered player, they've had a points deduction, which confirmed Bristol and Liverpool into the Champions League. So it's disappointing. I really feel for the players. I think, you know, to be deprived of Champions League football for something that was out of their hands. You know, they go on the pitch, they're responsible for getting results, but administration, bits and pieces that go on behind, you know, behind the scenes or higher up in the club, it's got nothing to do with them. So, you know, I had a chat with one or two, and I know that they're, you know, they're really disappointed, and, you know, it's what more can you say? It's a real shame for them.
Well, it's just a weird one as well, because it's obviously the player in question is Katie Chapman. It's not as if she's a youth team player who's come through and they just want to put her on the bench or anything like that. So, very strange, but obviously Arsenal are in the Champions League at present, and they are off to sunny Kazakhstan.
Couldn't get any further away if they tried, could they? It's an unbelievable journey that they've got ahead of them, a horrible draw for them, but, you know, it's almost a bye into the next round, and God, I'm sounding really disrespectful.
Yeah, you really are. You need to stop it.
I can assure you. The lack of sleep has got nothing to do with it, but you just have to say it as it is sometimes, mate. And, you know, the team in Kazakhstan, you know, may present some difficulties for Arsenal when they're in the away leg, but when they come back to London, I'm sure it's going to be pretty straightforward.
To be fair, it's a stamp on the passport.
It is, yeah, that's true. It is.
They are, of course, joined by Birmingham, who have drawn opposition from Finland. PK 32 Vantra. Vanta? Vanta.
PK Vanta, yeah. I think PK 32 or PK 35 or whatever number they are.
Sounds like a form.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I actually managed to have a little chat with the Birmingham City Ladies chairman. I went to Bristol Academy v Birmingham a couple of weeks ago. And he was saying to me that the Finland trip is obviously a good draw for them. But he also said something that was quite interesting. He said, Champions League football doesn't necessarily prove particularly profitable for clubs, because when you take in the travel and the accommodation and everything that comes with it, the prize money that comes from winning, you know, the games that they take part in doesn't always cover that. So it's a shame, really, isn't it? You know, you want to play Champions League football, and you look at the amount of money that's, we hate to compare it, but that's in the men's competition, and I just thought it was a bit sad that, you know, Birmingham and Arsenal as well, who are obviously in the competition at the moment, could lose out financially for being successful.
Yeah, it's a strange one. Obviously, the other ties, there's a couple of absolute belters to look forward to. Tirasoe versus Paris Saint-Germain is certainly one of them.
Cannot wait for that one, mate. I really cannot wait for that one. If I could go to the game, I would be straight over to both legs. It's going to be an incredible game, I think. Tie of the round, without a doubt. People have said on Twitter that it's the strongest last 32 match that they have ever seen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because one of them, I think it was Tirasoe, weren't seeded. So it was meant that they were going to come up against a seeded team. That seeded team is Paris Saint-Germain, obviously, who've recruited a few players over the off-season in you know, the likes of Delis and Laura Georges, both from Lyon. Oh, sorry, Laura Georges from Lyon, Delis from Montpellier. And it's going to be an incredible match, mate. I'm really looking forward to that one. Tirasoe, I've got some ridiculous number of internationals in their team, so it's going to be a belter.
Yeah, we also saw the draw for the round after this one as well. And if all goes according to plan, Kieran, Lyon, Potsdam, could happen.
Lyon Potsdam, yeah, a repeat of the final from a few years ago, which obviously took place in Fulham, a game I went to a few years ago. Yeah, that'll be a good one. But I hate to be negative about it, but it almost seems a shame that one of them, as you say, if it goes according to plan, one of them will be out at the last 16 stage. And you want to see the strongest teams getting into the latter stages,
yeah,
don't you?
Of course.
But, you know, and there's another tie, if I'm not mistaken, as well, that could see another big team go out, isn't there, mate?
There is. I'm guessing, is Wolfsburg heading to Estonia, and then if they get through that, potentially facing Malmo.
Malmo, who of course are leading the way in Sweden, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but yeah, Wolfsburg, the current champions, Malmo, the current leaders in Sweden, could potentially again meet in the last 16, which would mean one of them is eliminated, and again, bit of a shame, but I guess that's the way the draw's made, isn't it?
Mind you, it also opens the way for maybe a less fancy team to reach the latter stages of the competition, and that's always good. I'm just going to quickly round up and just say that Lyon will head to Holland to face 20, and Tabina Potsdam are facing MTK Hungary of... Quiz question, of who?
Hungary.
Very good. A bit obvious, that one. We would mention the...
You're missing the biggest one of the lot.
All right, I get it. You are, of course, referring to the potential clash between two more of our WF bloggers, Jess Fishlock of Glasgow City and Gilly Flaherty of Arsenal Ladies. However, we caught up with Glasgow City head coach Ed Black to discuss his team's involvement in the Champions League.
Well, Ed, welcome to the Women's Football Podcast. Life has been quite good up in Glasgow recently. Obviously, you've been... doing well in the league, all but won it, hopefully, and a Champions League tie to look forward to.
Yeah, obviously we've still got 1 point to get to guarantee the title. Our goal difference is quite heavy, so I think 1 point would virtually do it. So we've got ourselves in a really good position for that. And we obviously managed to come through a very tough European group, so plenty of big games to look forward to.
Let's have a quick chat about Scottish football as a whole. Is it in good health at the moment?
I think that it's been well written and talked about that the Scottish football isn't where it was maybe back in the 80s. We just feel that there's probably not been enough investment done by the government. To help in facilities and resources and get kids playing far more, so that's had a knock-on effect in the game. But I think slowly but surely we're gradually getting back there, and the introduction of performance schools up here and academies have really helped getting a lot of young kids back in playing football again.
And obviously Glasgow City have been doing their fair share of encouraging the game along.
Yeah, I mean, we have from 7 and 8 year olds all the way through to the first team, so there's quite an extensive pathway for anyone coming to our club, so they can do that and come in at 6 and progress through to the under-9s, 11s, 13s, 15s, 17s, reserves, first team. So yeah, there's a great pathway there, and we're just one of many clubs up here who are actually doing a lot of good work.
You are, of course, an amateur club, but by the sound of it, not for very long.
Well, I mean, we are an amateur club in basis that we don't pay players a weekly wage. Expenses is what our players will get. And we do have 5 players at the academy. So they combine football and education. So you can almost say they're 11 in the lives of pros. And we have another few now being selected for the central contracts with Scotland. So that's going to help the situation. And they'll be able to drop their... that I was at work with obviously a lot of support from employers, and I think that'll be of great benefit not only to the game in general up here but also to us as a club.
Your success this season would suggest that the players almost think of themselves as professionals.
I think professionalism is more to do with attitude rather than how much money you get paid. I think it's maybe, I don't know if it's been a problem maybe down in England, but our players have certainly graduated from once a week, twice a week, all the way through to every night, and we've barely been recompensed for that, but it just shows you that the attitude is the key ingredient in any young football player. I mean, once you get to this level, it's not about ability anymore.
Obviously, you signed Jess Fishlock, a professional player. What impact has she had on the squad?
I think that more than anything, we want Jess to be very influential as much off the park as on it. And that means just little wee things in terms of preparation. And whether it could be people maybe going to the gym in the morning, because a number of players do that, go 6:30 in the morning to the gym. Well, at the sport, the Institute of Sport, which is obviously a great facility, a big great link that we have with the national team. So they go to the Institute of Sport 7 in the morning, say for example, and finish there and go to their work and maybe grab a sandwich. And then people like Jess and could maybe show some of our players that maybe it's not so much a sandwich they need, maybe it's more protein they need to them, and just show them in terms of preparation wise wee things that could help them become more professional in their attitude.
She could certainly do that because she has a fantastic character to her.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think already we've seen a bit of evidence that say that she's going to be a fantastic addition for us for the rest of the season.
I know you mentioned that obviously you don't pay your players apart from expenses, but what you do pay them in is experiences, and your Champions League tie with Standard Liège is certainly going to be that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the squad's been together now, well, a lot of the players have been together now for a number of years, and they've experienced a lot of highs and lows in Europe, and you just hope you can try and keep them all together for as long as possible, because every year that experience helps, there's no doubt about that. And probably the first time we've gone into it probably is, and without a doubt we've gone into the last, and our last 32 tie is the favourites to win through the next round. So that's a first. We only got that tag because of being seeded, and we only got seeded because of the amount of work that the players have put in over the years, and that's all came from the experience we've gained in the early part of those last 5 or 6 years.
What do you know of Standard Liège?
Well, we've got a fair bit of information about them already. We know they're not a team that's multicultural. In terms of obviously international players, but they have certainly got a real basis of good top Belgian players playing for them. And you know, obviously they played in the new Benny League. And finished runners up, and they actually lost to in the last game of the season to 20. So we know they're going to be quite a formidable opposition for us to get advanced to the next round. We're going to have to play very, very well over the both ties.
What's your target for this season's Champions League?
First and foremost, I'm not going to set anything further than the next round. I just want to try and get through this next round. After that, then I'll look at that round and see what that brings. So it's just going to be one stage at a time for me. I know it sounds boring, but that's the way I've always worked. I never look too far ahead because you never know what's round the corner in this game.
Obviously, if you do make it to the next round, you might face Arsenal. Is that a bit of an unnecessary distraction? Because I know the media has made a bit of a big deal of that.
Understand why the media would speak about that, but the only thing we could focus on and what's certainty right now is that we have a tie against Standard Liège. The Arsenal game is just pie in the sky right now, because if we get beat next round, there's no tie to be played. So I just have to focus myself and the rest of the squad on the certainty that we have got to play Standard Liège.
I wanted to conclude, obviously Glasgow have been quite dominant over the last few years. Is that good for the game up in Scotland, or would you like to see some of the other teams closing the gap?
I would say that I'm delighted that we continue to dominate. As far as other ones closing the gap, believe you me, the other clubs are working hard at it. They are trying. People may not see that from the outside, but there's certainly a lot of good work going on at other clubs in this country, and they are trying to progress forward. But you have to remember, while they're all trying to catch us, we're setting our sights on doing better in the Champions League. So the gap's still staying the same, because we're pushing on one more step again. So that maybe doesn't look too clever, but I can tell you that certainly the Scottish teams are a wee bit better than, there's certainly two or three teams in the league that are a wee bit better than people imagine.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Get involved via Facebook.
Facebook.com/WFpod.
So, Kieran, that brings us on to having a little look at the leagues around Europe. And while some are just beginning, others are drawing to a close.
They are, mate, yeah. We'll keep it brief. We obviously focus on a few particular leagues in Europe, and one of those is the Damallsvenskan in Sweden. Almost coming to a close, finishes at the end of October. Malmo currently sit top of the league by 4 points at the time of recording. 4 games remaining. Tyresö in second on 41 points. It's going to be between those two, mate, to be honest with you. Everyone else is a little bit too far behind to catch up with them. Malmo have been in great form. Anja Mittag has been banging in goals for fun. And it's going to be difficult for Tyresö, but obviously, as we know, incredibly strong. Lots of internationals in that side. So it's potentially going to go down to the wire, but if Malmo keep winning their games, then it's in their hands. Tyresö aren't going to be able to catch them. We'll go over to France, and obviously, as you mentioned, some of the leagues are still only just starting out, and the French league is one of them. As you would expect, it's Lyon leading the way. They've been in emphatic form. Three games gone at time of recording, 17 goals for, one conceded.
Oh, they're in bad form, aren't they?
I know. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? I mean, I love watching Lyon. They're a joy on the eye. They've got so much class in that side. They've got Megan Rapinoe joining them soon, and they're only going to get stronger. But, you know, is it good for the French league that they are so dominant? You know, they beat, promoted, I'm going to pronounce it as Muret, M-U-R-E-T. I'm going to say it's Muret.
Yeah.
So we'll go with that, whether it's right or not. I apologise if it's wrong, but they beat them 10-1 last week, and you don't want to see that. You don't want to see a promoted club absolutely annihilated in one of their first games in the division.
They scored a goal, though.
They did score a goal, yeah, so I guess that gives them something to, you know, to cheer about. But 10-1 defeat. PSG are second, but it's only on goal difference. They've won all of their games as well. Montpellier in third, only played the two games, but they have a 100% record at the moment. And interesting that Jenny Beattie scored in one of those games as well. So congratulations to her. Started well for Montpellier. And I will go over to Germany, where obviously it is a new season there as well. Only two games played at the time of recording. And it is a four-way tie at the top of the league at the moment, to be in a pot stand by Leverkusen, Frankfurt and Bayern Munich all currently sit on 4 points, having won one and drawn one. And it's also worth mentioning that Bayern Munich signed the NWSL Rookie of the Year, Erika Timrak, a few weeks ago. So adding strength to a developing side, Bayern Munich. So I think they might be a team to look out for. Interesting, Wolfsburg played 2-1, drawn both of them. So wow. Currently sitting at the wrong end of the league. No way will they be there come the end of the season. But interesting that they haven't exactly started particularly brightly. And we'll just finish off the Euro roundup. We've obviously got our Brit watch, or our Brits abroad watch. And one of the players we've been looking at is Ashley Hinks, who we interviewed in a recent podcast. She's been playing out in Iceland. The Icelandic league has now finished. But positive season for Ashley. Finished with a hat-trick on the final day of the season, or certainly got a couple of goals on the last day of the season.
Oh, so, go on, Ashley.
Exactly. Go on, Ashley. So, great season for her. Not sure what she's going to be doing now the season's finished. But a positive way for her to finish her Icelandic campaign.
Excellent. Right, let's switch over briefly to the NWSL. We did mention in the intro that we would have a quick chat about it, and you mentioned Timrak in your Euro roundup, Kieran, and she's not the only American who's gone over to Europe to get some games in the off-season. There's been a raft of them who have gone over to Russia, to Germany, and if you follow us on Twitter at WFPod, you can see exactly who's gone. There's also been a few appointments around the NWSL. Kieran?
Yep, there has. Mark Parsons, who was appointed as the Washington Spirits head coach back in July, was actually promoted to GM. Well, he'll hold dual roles, so he'll actually be the head coach and the GM. Mark came in, as I said, in July, oversaw a difficult season for Washington. I think they won a couple of games under his leadership, but you know, he's got a good background, mate. You know, he's worked over here in England, for a number of years. He's been involved with Chelsea Ladies and developed a lot of young players for them, and has got a lot of experience working out of America. He's a UEFA licensed qualified coach, so you know it should be a good move for them. And Laura Harvey holds a very similar role at Seattle Reign. You know, she's head coach and GM as well. So it'd be interesting to see how Mark gets on in his new role. And also, the Boston Breakers have appointed a new head coach. They've appointed Tom Durkin, and Tom comes from the FC Celtic Bolts, which is cool. A very interesting sounding club, who apparently play in the US Soccer Development Academy. So Tom takes over from Lisa Cole, who obviously lost her job midway through last season. And on Tom's appointment, General Manager Lee Billiard said on the Boston website, "After interacting with him over the final 2 weeks of the regular season and watching him work, I know we have a top quality coach here in Boston. I'm confident Tom we'll take the team where we want it to be and develop the players we have in our squad." So I must confess, I don't know a lot about Tom Durkin, but clearly Boston rate him very highly. So we'll have to see how he gets on next year.
Absolutely. Speaking of the Boston Breakers, we of course spoke to a pair of them in the NWSL special we released a couple of weeks ago. And here's part two of your chat with Leanne Sanderson and Joanna Lohman.
Boston Breakers teammates. Let's find out a little bit about them. Who is the most skillful in the squad? Joanna.
I mean, I'm going to be a bit biased here, but not necessarily. I think Leanne is the most skilled on the team. She just comes from a background where you live, eat, and breathe football. So I'd be disappointed if she wasn't the most skilled on the team. And she definitely rocked some sick skills against Portland, where she backheel megged a player and then megged another player. And we can show it to you on video. But it was probably one of the best things I've ever seen on the soccer field.
Leanne, who's the quickest in the side?
Oh, I mean, there's no question. Sydney LaRue is the quickest player, one of the quickest players ever. And it's kind of frightening how fast she is. And she's amazingly quick. And just seeing how fast she is in training every day is kind of amazing. And there's a lot of fast players in America. And I've petitioned to get a race. I want them to race each other, like Sid, Lisa Devanna, Rampone, a lot of the players that are really, really fast. Because I think it'll be really cool to see them all race against each other.
I think we'd want to see that as well. Yeah. We spoke to Laura Harvey last month. She mentioned that Seattle Reign have a Donkey of the Day t-shirt, which was handed to players that were doing silly things and saying silly things. If there was a Donkey of the Day in your squad, who's the most likely to get that t-shirt most often?
I'd probably say Mariah Nogueira. We always have this banner because she tells me I'm clumsy because I sometimes fall over randomly. But Mariah's I'd say she's kind of a bit of a joker. She likes to have fun, social person, and she's pretty outgoing. So I'd probably say maybe Mariah.
I've had a few funny moments of the season where my shoe fell off in one of the games.
And she carried on.
And then I put it back on and kept playing. I got smacked in the face from about 3 yards away and just tried to keep playing. I felt like I was deformed. And then I also had a situation where I tripped over the ball and then got back up at rapid speed and then kicked the ball out of bounds. So it was actually my mom's favorite play of the season. So that just kind of shows her sophistication of the game, but I appreciated her compliment.
Who's the biggest moaner in the squad?
Oh, I think you might be talking to one of them. I think the girls that make fun of me because I don't like getting fouled, and I don't mind getting my shirt pulled and things like that. And I understand defenders and I have to do it. And sometimes that's why I'm not a very good defender, because I don't pull all those tactics that Vidic does. You know, when you have to be kind of sneaky and things like that. But I'd say I like to have a moan, but I don't think I'm a bad teammate. I think I don't moan necessarily at my teammates. I think I try and get the best out of them, and but I complain at the ref, and I know myself, and I think I do have a little moan sometimes, and most of the time I vent to Joe about something that's happening during the game that might be going for or against us.
Joe, I don't got any anecdotes, maybe any stories where Leanne's done that during the middle of a game, anything that spring to mind?
Of course. Every time Leanne gets injured, it happens to be the worst injury that's ever happened in a game of all time. She usually tends to fall into the fetal position and a few tears may be shed. So whether it be her hand or her lip, she always compares her injuries to everyone else's injuries, and hers are always the worst.
But
so
my injuries are never even bad. I know, afterwards I'm I don't know. But one thing I want to tell you guys about is that on our meet and greet thing, the end of the season ticket holder party, this one little kid came up to me and told me that her best time of the whole season was when I was really brave and I got kicked in the face with a ball, went down and got back on, and she told me that I was a warrior, and it was completely unprovoked. And I made sure, I went around to all of my teammates that were sitting down signing autographs, the other kids, and I said, tell them what you said. And it just made my day that she thought I was some kind of hero because I got hit in the face with a ball.
Well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure and I've loved every minute of it. I really do appreciate you coming on the Women's Football Podcast. We wish you well in your Champions League venture. And obviously, we wish you well with the Jolie Academy. If you want information on the Jolie Academy, which is a programme that Joanna and Leanne both run, people can find out about it. Where, Leanne?
www.jolieacademy.com, or you can tweet us at Leanne Sarnason, at Joanna Lohman, and at Jolie Academy, and on Facebook.
You heard it there, guys, so go and check it out.
The Women's Football Podcast.
Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud.
SoundCloud.com/WFpod.
So there we go. Leanne Sanderson and Joanna Lohman talking about their teammates at the Boston Breakers. Now, Kieran, you had Leanne Sanderson. You must have asked her about England.
It was too good an opportunity not to, my friend. So, of course, I did, yes.
Good lad.
And now you've spoken about Hope Powell enough, and I'm not even going to go there. But what I am interested in is that obviously there's going to be a new era, and it would be interesting to know, and I'm sure people would like to know, is Leanne Sanderson making herself available for England selection?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason why I took myself out of that situation was because of how I was kind of made to feel and stuff like that. But I think I've always said that if there was a new coach that come in, I'd always be open to playing for my country again. I never retired, as reports reported that before. But I mean, everyone wants to play for their country. Always an honour to play for my country. Singing that national anthem and wearing the three lions on my shirt sounds cliche and cheesy, but it felt like an amazing feeling, and I hope to have that feeling back again under a new management.
So there we go, Leanne Sanderson ruling herself very much into the future England. And that brings us to the end of the podcast. We've got to mention a few things. The first, a massive, massive thank you to Chantel Elder for making our Twitter header. You can follow Chantel on Twitter. Her handle is @_CLE7. And she is, as you can see, absolutely fantastic at graphic design. So thank you very much, Chantel. We had a very special intro for this episode. Kieran, what is it about?
Yeah, you may have noticed, obviously, we had an intro from Jen O'Neill, who's the editor of the publication She Kicks magazine, which is a football magazine based in the UK. They've teamed up with Breast Cancer Care, which is a charity over here, and for every subscription that is purchased from She Kicks, they will donate £3 to the charity. Really important cause. We're fully behind it. We hope you are too. If you're not a subscriber of She Kicks, I definitely recommend it. A fantastic publication, and at the same time, you'll be supporting a really fantastic charity. So make sure you visit shekicks.net and subscribe to the mag.
Absolutely. A win-win situation if ever there was one. We also have a survey going. We would like to hear from you about how we can do this better. It's such a complicated link that we will actually put it on our Twitter description. So certainly have a look at that. Just remember that we are at WFPod and you'll find it there. And then I think all that's left to say is thank you very much to Ed Black at Glasgow City, Leanne Sanderson and Joanna Lohman of the Boston Breakers, Gemma Bonner and Tash Harding, who, of course, from Liverpool and Bristol Academy, and also WF Blog. So there we go, Kieran. Another podcast in the bag. Thank you as ever.
No problem at all, mate. And thanks for all the listeners for tuning in.
And we will speak to you again very soon.
The Women's Football Podcast,
shining a light on the women's game.